to be somewhat of a repeat of information. And you're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Haleiwa, K224 CQ in Molawa'a, and it's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we will realize the value of a common medicinal weed. Not that medicinal weed. Select the ideal site for our garden or farm, and hang out on the dark side of the yard with some pretty shady characters. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our fine sponsors.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapaa Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda Garden and Lawn Equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday, 246-GROW, and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
What a great bunch they are, our underwriters. We love you guys. Thanks for adding so much value to our community, not only through your donations to the station, but also through the amazing work you do in your businesses that add value to our community as well. We want to invite our listeners as well to join in the generosity and consider giving a tax-deductible donation to our great radio station, as so many have and so many people who contributed to the air conditioning fund. And we're very blessed to have the team in here today installing the new system, thanks to generosity from listeners like you. And gosh, a couple months ago, we got a very generous donation during a show when we put the plea out. So thanks to you if you're listening. Thanks to everyone who's a member or considering membership. KKCR.org is the place to go. And donation ability to donate on the page there, please consider supporting your community radio station. And Robin, howdy.
Aloha.
How's it been? And we're joined by Mac.
How's it, Kauai? And to Robin and Paul for doing a great job.
Mac, thank you for coming in and helping us. He's an essential part of the team here, not only in the station, but we get him out to the garden as well. This man can dig. And his horse soon will be adding to the compost pile as well. So looking forward to that. Today we have a pretty full schedule, so we're going to jump right in with a celestial session, starting with the Hawaiian moon of the day. Thanks to Maka'ala and the other good folks over at the Hanalei Watershed Hui for predicting or forecasting, if you will, the specific moons that would be specific to Kauai. There is a difference in the way in which the moon system is calculated based on islands. And so the 2015 Hanalei moon and tide calendar is our reference of choice. And we are going to be celebrating the moon, Akua, rising tonight in the second Anahulu or week in the Hawaiian moon month, Poi Poi, which means rounding or full. And in fact, the full moon will be rising and technically will reach its fullest fullness at 8:05 a.m. tomorrow is when the full moon actually occurs. But Akua is rising over Kauai tonight at 6:13 p.m. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, 33 minutes after midnight. And she will set at 6:50 a.m. tomorrow morning. 99% of the moon's face is illuminated during this transit of the sky. Akua is the 14th night in the Hawaiian moon month. It also means god, goddess, spirit, ghost, devil, image, idol, a corpse, divine, supernatural, and godly. Akua might mate with humans and give birth to normal humans, mo'o, the lizards, or kupua, which are demigods. And Akua is also the name of a banana variety. Planting recommendations for the Akua moon rising this evening: kalo, taro, uala, sweet potato, mai'a, bananas, and corn.
Wow, incredibly mirrored by the biodynamic look at things.
No surprise.
This week it is planting time. The moon's in its descending phase. And today and tomorrow the moon's in Leo, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit plants or plant them, such as banana and
corn.
Corn, yep. Exactly. Friday through Sunday, moon in Virgo is an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. So we'll have some more time for taro there and potentially some other spring roots. And a water trine on Monday, and there'll be more of these through the month of March, which is going to hopefully influence some rainy weather for our dry soils. Will lead to a leaf planting day, although the moon is still technically in Virgo. The calendar uses the water sign as a reason for a water trine, excuse me, for leaf planting. And then Tuesday next, the moon's in Libra, an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants.
Oh, yes. And we hope that people are working diligently with their plants in advance of the next seed and plant exchange, which we can shamelessly plug here on the station because it is a community service, so we can even set out the call to action that people actually show up at the seed and plant exchange.
And what a perfect day for it, because today is March 4th, which is the only day of the year that is a command. So we say
a call to action,
March
indeed.
4th to the seed exchange on
indeed.
The 22nd.
And beforehand, March 4th to your garden to gather cuttings, maybe some extra plants you have in the nursery, or perhaps ones that you've even propagated specially for the seed and plant exchange. We're really excited for all the different participants, and especially for Diane Ragone from the Breadfruit Institute, who's going to be our featured speaker and is coming and sharing four varieties of breadfruit. So not only the ma'afala that we've been familiar with now, given the thousands of trees that have been given out by NTBG, but now three other varieties coming in to complement the mix and give us an even longer stretch of production throughout the year as well. So very exciting times. March 22nd, Sunday, the Seed and Plant Exchange, noon to 5 p.m. at the Kauai Mini Golf. So please consider joining us for that that no-cost event. And we're going to do a little bit of notable news. Now, sometimes our notable news is not really new news, but it's news to me and probably news to several people out there and certainly old news to others. But I was also acknowledging, too, that we get to have opinions on the show because of the disclaimer that came at the top of the show. And so as somebody who's very passionate about the care, the restoration of our soils, the preservation of our environment, while at the same time increasing sustainable food production on the island, understanding that we are truly part of the environment, but that we need to really look closely at the practices that we do. As somebody who participated strongly in the although certainly not as strongly as some of my brothers and sisters, in the 2491 disclosure bill and a call for a public health study for the island of Kauai related to pesticide use, that back in December, the county of Kauai, in association with the Hawaii State Department of Ag, is doing a collaborative process where they collaboratively are funding a third party to do a fact-finding mission on what we really know. Where is the science with the use of pesticides on Kauai specifically? What sort of health data is there? And bringing together stakeholders from both sides that are picked for their ability to actually work with people on the opposite side of the issue. So while I've been somebody who's been quite heated in my opinions, sometimes it can be discouraging when it just turns into a name-calling kind of situation. And this at least appears to be one opportunity where some of the solid evidence can really be merged together to get a clearer picture. Anyway, this could be a hope, and certainly the consultants who are doing the work seem to be extremely capable of that work. So we'll hope for that. Dr. Adler leading the Accord Network, and for more information, folks could go to the following web address, Accord, A-C-C-O-R-D, the number 3.com, Accord3.com, and if you look under the projects links, you'll find the project called GM Crops and Pesticides on Kauai. The update is that they've recently picked the consulting board of people who will help bring forward the information from both sides of the issue. Our good several people we really value in the community are representing, people who can hopefully host that conversation in a way where we can really make it to the finish line and get all of the known data together, at any rate, and the science together. And it seems like this consulting group has the opportunity to synthesize that information. So not that this is a solution, but it's one approach that gives me some hope that we'll know more when they're done with their research in about a year. There will be opportunities for community comment, so we'll give you a mention about that in an upcoming show when it becomes available.
Great.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of news to me and maybe to you as well. We will move on here, and it's time once again to crack open our medicine chest. We're super grateful to have relationships with plants that can heal our bodies, even as we are nutrifying our bodies with the medicinal plants that are the food plants that we feed, that feed us every day, that have antioxidants, that have all sorts of preventative properties to them. But sometimes we need to actually address an acute situation or maybe even a chronic situation that has developed. And so we turn to our medicinal warrior plants, and we're excited to focus in on one that is one of the near and dear plants for in the tradition of Kumu Lavan Ohai, who Robin and I have both been tutored by. And this is Laukahi, the common plantain, not to be confused with the fruit plantain, which otherwise known as a banana, that's like a starchy banana, essentially, is also a plantain. But this is instead a very unassuming weed that's found just right there on ground level in most cases, and we have two major forms here in Hawaii. We have the Plantago major and the Plantago lanceolata.
Let me guess. The lanceolata must be the thinner-leaved one.
Correct.
And the major is the mother one, the female, as
well. It's interesting.
Kumu Ohai taught us.
Indeed, he did. And funny enough, I was looking at a video on YouTube, I guess it was, with another Kumu La'au Lapa'au from Oahu, from the same school that Ojai taught at the University of Hawaii, and she actually said it was the other way around.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so that the kane was the round one, and that the wahine was the long one. So,
oh, interesting. Well, either way, they're flowering right now, which is part of what inspired us to want to talk about them, because yes, they can be pretty unassuming when they're just leafy, but once those flower heads go up, they're pretty hard to miss.
Indeed, and they can grow in profusion and beautiful display. Before we get to them proper, let's give a moment to mention some of their relatives. The source of psyllium seed is actually in the same genus, Plantago ovata, and that one grown for the husks of the seed that are good for cleansing the GI tract, if you will, the digestive tract. And we also do have some native plants, some endemic Hawaiian laukahi.
Oh, well, this is interesting. I don't know of them, so
they're
tell
very,
us.
They're unusual to very rare and endangered. And the name laukahi kuahivi, or the mountain laukahi, and it would be interesting to discover if they had the name before the common laukahi, the weed which grows in sort of human inhabited areas. Did the laukahi of the forest already have the name laukahi? And then when the introduced varieties came, they said, oh, this is a cousin of, and it got the same name. Or was it the other way around? It would be interesting to find out. But Plantago laxifolia, Plantago princeps, Anomala, and Longibractiacta are the two varieties of princeps, as well as Plantago pachyphylla are all native to the Hawaiian Islands. We have three of the species here on Kauai. I have seen them in their wild habitat it was above the name is not coming to me, but it's the flat above Kalalau. So it's when you're in Kalalau, you see a mountain, but it's actually just the bottom of a ridge, essentially, that it dominates Kalalau when you're in the valley. And so if you're on top of that ridge, this is where the mountain laukahi grows, amongst other places.
Oh, it's not an easy place to get to.
Not an easy place to get to. More of a woody shrub, a longer, much longer-lived plant than the common weedy one that we have.
Wow.
And beautiful, and certainly deserving of cultivation. And I can imagine getting it into the hands of somebody like Neil Sams, our buddy who grows orchids, or other people who are quite adept at pot culture of difficult to grow plants, we could have a profusion of these laukahi, the endemic varieties, growing for us to admire here in the lowlands of Kauai.
And do they have similar medicinal qualities to the common, quote, weedy ones in our yards?
Not so sure about that. The record from Bernice Krause's book on native Hawaiian plants, the leaves were baked and eaten as a tonic, used as a laxative. So if that's one of the uses of the common laukahi, yes. Treating boils or sores, it's certainly known for its topical use on cuts and scrapes. So I would say, yes, it sounds like it's similar, if I'm understanding the reference to the endemic plant as well.
Yeah. Well, what's an easy way to use the plantain leaves?
Sure. Two of the really easy ways of using it are as a poultice. It's really good for stings, also for scrapes or cuts, those kind of things. It does have antibacterial properties, as well as what they say antitoxin qualities to it. So really good for bee stings or other kinds of stings. And gathering the leaves, crushing them, even macerating or chewing them. If you don't have an easy way to crush them, you've got your teeth with you, hopefully. And then just sort of squeezing it, applying it, pressing it on the affected area, and then perhaps even wrapping it. If you have some pa'akai, some Hawaiian sea salt, it's very good at extracting the cocoa or the plant juices from that plant as well. So these are some of the ways. As well, it can be used internally. Young leaves can be eaten, both fresh or lightly steamed. As well, one of the ways that Kumu'ohai prefers to do many of his Hawaiian medicinal herbs is to stick them in a blender with a little bit of water, blend it up, and put it through some kind of a strainer. Tea bag or a paint strainer bag works really well. And then drinking that, you can keep that juice in the refrigerator for a few days while it still retains its medicinal qualities.
Yeah. One of the things I loved learning from Kumu'ohai was if you chew the leaves up, you mix them with your own saliva, and then when the juices come out of the plant onto your skin in the affected area, they're more accepted by the body because there's a recognition of part of you is in there. I always thought that was really beautiful. Mm.
Yes, and that same sort of concept is carried through in the use of mimi or the consumption of one's own urine, that it's a feedback mechanism, yes, that it's a mirror, sort of a realignment or resetting of a balancing system that the body does when it creates that sort of balance of hormones and different constituents within the urine. When it's consumed back again, it sort of reprograms the body into a healthy state, or so I have been taught. So lakahi plantain, considered by some as one of the safest medicinal herbs, and really that there are no known or confirmed contraindications, potentially for people who have really strong allergies to many things. It could potentially set off, but there weren't even really any recorded cases of that I saw. Instead, it was referred to as extremely safe to use. And anything else on laukahi? Seeds can be gathered. The plant certainly will spread on its own, but can be grown quite easily from seed. I have done so in the past. You did mention before the show about their preference for wet areas.
That's right. That's
then
right.
Your subsequent discovery of it minutes later.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll talk about that a little more during our feature of site plan and prep.
I did want to mention a website that was brought to my attention in my research that I really appreciated, and it's called herballegacy.com. And this is a website that is a compendium of many of the remedies and wisdom of the work of a pioneering herbalist known as Dr. John R. Christopher. Although he was not a true doctor, he was a herbalist in the 20th century who seemed to do a lot of research, develop a lot of medicinal herb preparations, combinations of medicinal herbs. This particular website includes a lot of really interesting information on single herbs as well as these herbal formulas. There's quite a lot of information about kava kava from various authors, and includes the cold sheet treatment, which was an advanced healing practice. Again, I learned from Kumu'ohai, so I'm curious whether or not I'm thinking perhaps that he was influenced or was a student of Dr. John R. Christopher, although he didn't mention him in the time that I spent with him. So again, herballegacy.com, and a portal too into various websites related to the research of John Christopher and his collaborators. So a lot of herbal medicinal plant information pretty scattered on the web. This seemed to be a really great resource where you could get a lot of information all in one place.
Wow, the cold sheet thing has me curious already. I'll have to go check that out.
Yes, it's a very effective way of scaring a disease out of your body after fasting and preparation. Anyway, I won't pull you all the way through it, but it's a pretty dramatic, if you're at your wit's end, it seems like one of the last stands you could make to really get the demons out, essentially, get those unhealthy organisms or that unhealthy state out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting to look at. want to let people know this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. With your host Paul and Robin, we're here until 1 o'clock, and we are going to step in this month. This is our first show in the month of March, and we are taking the show through a journey on various aspects this year. We've taken a break from delving into plant families as we did extensively last year. Instead, this year, we're giving a focus to various aspects of creating a garden or a farm or a plant production or a growing process from start to finish, if you will, taking that sort of view. It's a view that we worked on some in the gardening and farming training program that we used to run there at Kauai Community College, and now is proliferating in various ways across the island. We, in turn, were certainly inspired by the work of Jillian Seals and her farm-to-table program. She was a real pioneer of some of the training here on Kauai, and of course so many people for so many generations before. But the work is being carried on, and in the training program that's happening at Kanui Kapono Charter School right now, a five-week garden training program, John Parziali, who was a teacher at KCC in our program there, shared about site assessment and selection just this past Saturday. I was not there, but we are happening to focus on the same topic this week. Just happened to line up that way. So for any of the students, the likelihood of that really based on the fact that we look to permaculture and the principles therein for our guidance at this stage. And a lot of that has to do with the emphasis that's put from permaculture on observation.
Indeed. The process goes a little bit like this. Observe. Collect data. Observe. Make connections. Observe. Clarify your goals. And observe some more. So we're really all about observing. But in the beginning, we want to say, you know, there's an important question. Do you have a place to garden, or are you looking for a place to garden? Is there somewhere in your yard that you're considering? Are you considering whether or not it's worth digging into a garden if you're just renting a place? There's lots of options. You know, obviously there's buying land is one of them. Renting land would be another one of them. Going in together with some neighbors to create a garden in your neighborhood that everyone can tend and eat from. And then, of course, there's our various community gardens here on Kauai.
Mm-hmm. Three that are on our radar right now is, first off, starting on the North Shore, the community garden at the Church of the Pacific. Gray Hayton leading that effort. And as well, we'll go all the way to the west side. In mentioning the Kekaha Community Garden and mentioning both of those together, because those gardens use the communal gardening method where everybody puts in on the care of the whole garden, that would be similar to the food forest in Kalihiwai. And that contrasted with then the Kalihiwai Community Garden adjacent to the food forest, which is a individual plot situation. And, you know, great for Each model or each approach, great for different people at different times of their process. You know, people who want to have complete control, or just that it's not really being a control freak, but it's just wanting to have that kind of relationship where every decision is made by one gardener is a really important relationship to have. And then working as a team and trying to figure out how to compromise, collaborate, and then potentially yield a much greater result by working with others is another opportunity too. And like Robin said, it doesn't have to happen within the confines of a community garden. It can happen in a backyard situation or on a community farm situation where business partners essentially come together to yield a unified result. So lots of options there.
Indeed. So when we're observing, we want to look at some specifics. And One of them is relative location.
Relative location, one of the primary principles of permaculture or primary applications would be noting not only your location, that your location relative to the garden, but various aspects or various elements within the system. For instance, the proximity of your compost pile to your garden and to your kitchen, and how exactly that plays out in terms of your workflow, and whether or not the compost pile is too far to go to turn it frequently enough, or gosh, it's kind of a hassle getting the finished compost to the garden, what the different connections might be there. So this is all about the observation and design of the system.
Sure. I think that's what I'd call an earth trine. Kitchen, garden, and compost are in a beautiful trine with one another.
Beautiful.
And they're certainly all going to feed one another.
Yes. So we want to think about that in that kind of overlays so many of the decisions, or as we observe, we're going to be asking, it's going to be bringing up questions for us. So taking relative location into mind and thinking about some of the major criteria or deciding points, if you will, about where shall I place my garden, either in my existing land that I am a steward of or I own or I rent or whatever, or perhaps selecting a new location. First of all, we're going to think about proximity to us and our zoning. Is it easy for us to get there? Is it convenient, which makes it fun to garden? Or is it inconvenient and it makes gardening a hassle? And sometimes it's not so easy to have your garden right next to where you live. But when it's possible, it's certainly not a bad choice to have it right outside your front door. Even if it's just a few small plants that you can have to maintain that relationship with plants, that you're caring for plants, and that the few you take care of outside your front door remind you of the remaining plants that are waiting for you elsewhere. But thinking about that and thinking about the access. If you're collaborating with a friend, but they only want you coming over a couple of hours a week or during the daytime when you might choose to harvest your vegetables just before dinner, access is an important consideration to have, as well as being able to access it from can you drive right up to it? Do you have to walk to it? These kind of considerations. And you may have choices. You may be able to achieve most of your wish list in one area, and yet you have to sacrifice some of the things that would have made another site a better choice.
Sure, sure. And I think that's what they mean by clarifying goals, is, you know, you have to sometimes make concessions. Well, another important thing to think about is sun.
It's so important.
So important.
Oh, my goodness.
Although later in the show, we will recommend some shade-loving plants for our garden. Most of our vegetable plants are really going to prefer 6 hours of full sun minimum. And so if we're looking to mostly grow food, you want to make sure that your garden space can do that. Although sometimes that's not a possibility. The space is small and shade is created either by a building or a tree or the neighbor's building even. The possibilities are endless. So one thing we were talking about before the show is painting the wall of the building white will actually bring a little more sun in. But we'll get into more details about that later.
There are some manipulations we can make, but when it comes to, say, cloud cover, if you're thinking on a larger scale of, like, where should I put my farm, it's dramatically different how much sun you can get in certain locations.
True.
I'm really crossing my fingers that the sun comes out more in Kalihiwai so that the starts I'm bringing to the seed exchange are a little sturdier than they appear to be at this time. We've had a lot of cloudy weather.
We've got 3 weeks almost.
We've got time. It's coming. It's time enough to grow and to heal. So we're thinking about sun exposure. That certainly can be influenced by trimming trees, but we definitely want to focus in on getting some good sun. We want to focus in on, as well, our any sort of sheltering that may occur. A sunny situation is good, but if it's in a vast plain and there's a ferocious wind that comes through, that could really spell the end of your garden pretty quickly, which is goes back to that concept of that Robin had mentioned earlier of observe, think about it, come back and observe. Because the day that you go and spend at your site, and it's that perfect sunny day, could be quite a bit different a week or later on.
And most likely will be.
And most likely will be. But even so, a skilled eye can look at a wind at the existing surrounding vegetation to see if adequate wind protection is occurring, and would be something to consider as well. We're going to think about the soil, too, because we have choices.
Yes, we are. We want to look at erosion concerns. Annual rainfall is going to play into the soil structure as well. drainage, whether or not there's a slope. There's a lot of considerations about soil.
Mm-hmm. There's really different, a lot of variation in terms of the quality of soils here on Kauai. The University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture has great information, primers that you can learn about the soils of Hawaii, the various soils that predominate in various parts of the island based on the lava flows, how old they are. It's all kind of the same parent material, but it's weathered under such different conditions that we have either high fertility, low fertility soils. These would be situations where if you were choosing a farm location, it would be good for you to focus in on those details. Of course, one of the really helpful things you can have is get a shovel, and as you're looking maybe around your backyard, is try to put that shovel into the ground and see what you got. We don't have really super beautiful deep topsoil in most parts of the inhabited parts of Kauai like we do on perhaps the mainland or other areas with vastly different soils. Yet we do have what generally could be considered a topsoil and a subsoil. And in various places, due to various activities that may have happened on the land, a lot of the topsoil may have been scraped away. And so the shovel can reveal that, but also sometimes plants can tell us what's going on.
That's right. And this is a little personal hobby of mine at the moment, is to observe the weeds that are growing on the soil. And of course, if you're going to do a big project, a soil test would be a really good factual, you know, way to know really what's going on in your soil. But it turns out that weeds can also tell their own story. And for instance, I have just a couple of examples here. Plantain, as we just spoke about a little earlier, that denotes poor drainage. So we're looking at wetter spots. Big plantain patch, maybe not the best place for a garden. Euphorbias, which are ever present in the garden as small garden weeds, and the mimosa, which we know here as Gila Gila, both denote tilled or disturbed land. Now, granted, that's not always such a bad thing. Disturbed land could mean that the person who lived there before you had a garden there, and they've already done some tilling and turning. That could be valuable. Burr grass, another really bummer plant if you've ever come across it. That's denoting disturbed land also, but dry and barren. It's this stuff likes the roadsides, and the little burrs will stick to your pants and hitchhike themselves to the next place. air plant, the mother plant, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, where a leaf will just give birth. That's a really sturdy plant. And interestingly, that's actually in the Kalanko family, Kalankoe, which, you know, we buy those little ornamental ones at the nurseries. They're so pretty. I wonder sometimes if the air plant that we see out in the forest isn't one of those that has kind of reverted to its primordial form. That one grows just about anywhere and is so strong it can actually even compete with pasture grass. Spiny amaranth. Probably next to nutsedge, one of the biggest banes that we can think of, denotes barren and disturbed land. So not a good sign if you see a bunch of spiny amaranth. This is pretty barren ground generally. And to wrap it up, nut sedge or Cypress rotundus, which there's a surprising lot of information out there. That one is distributed all over the planet. And it's found on wild, wet, and moist ground. So, again, a good sign of poor drainage when we see lots of nutgrass.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about disturbed soil, there is a delicate, sometimes almost imperceptible but visible, disturbance of the soil that is shown by the drainage patterns. So sometimes, even if there's only sparse grass, you can see where the water flowed through the landscape the last time there was a heavy rain. And that would be an elementary type 1 error mistake, is putting your garden right in the flow path of where the water is. So whether you can discern it when it's not raining, or one of the great things to do is when there's a very heavy rain going and you're just coming to know the piece of land in a more intimate way. Maybe you've lived with this little patch of your land for many years, but you never really considered putting a garden there, so you didn't observe it too closely.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and observe what's happening in the rainstorms as well.
Sure, and also wanting to consider, along with waterways, even if they're spontaneous waterways, wildlife pathways in the space. Not necessarily a great place if you see trains of chickens going through there, or even pig damage, which is also most likely going to indicate a wet area in the case of pigs,
right.
I would think.
So wildlife as well as domestic animals.
Sure.
Maybe your roommates like to cross the yard and you can see that traffic pattern. In all ways, you're instituting a new regime or system of management for this area, and it's mindful to think about the different things that we are impacting. As we are choosing to actually have a very positive impact on the land, we want to consider those other things that are impacted when we start a new garden. Trees in the landscape, also a very important thing. Like we said before, they could be providing windshade, windbreak. They could be providing shade. They could also be blocking the neighbor's bathroom or something else that is... trees are often a shared resource in the landscape, and just because we think it's on our property, we think it's our right to cut it down, and truly it is on one level, but perhaps it's an important tree in the viewplane of your neighbor. It could be an important tree from a resource standpoint, like a renewable source of mulch, like the how bush that so often gets cleared before people realize that it was an infinite engine of beautiful biomass that maybe they should have kept in the landscape instead of cutting it all down. And sometimes there are native species to consider, depending on where you live, that you may choose not to cut down if you knew what they were, and valuable fruit trees as well.
And observing the health of the existing trees is important as well, because if the tree is ailing in some way and may cause future problems, it before more garden goes in, it might be wise to make a change. I just like to answer a question that just came in, and unfortunately, as far as I know, there are no organic methods of controlling nutgrass besides hand pulling them. Coming up with a little screening tool, you know, some 2x4s with some hardware screen stretched across it and sifting the soil through that. You want the fine, like, quarter-inch hardware screen there, I think, mm-hmm. can be pretty effective, yeah. Although it is kind of beastly to the earthworms that may be populating the soil. It's kind of hard, but if you want to take the time,
right.
Certainly...
It's a labor of love. All I can say is if you can have it become part of your religion, even for a short period of time, that the ability to actually rid a small patch of land of nut grass is so rewarding. Mm. It's like a mountain. It's like climbing a mountain, really.
Yeah.
And then the thing you really want to make sure is that you're not reintroducing it with the use of any of the green waste compost or other things where the nut grass, unfortunately, and we think about it, it's like we're pulling all this stuff off. Oh, I don't want to dump it on my land. Oh, I'm sending it to the green waste. Well, it's coming back from the green waste in this form of the compost. So be real careful not to reintroduce or to introduce for the first time nut grass by the use of compost where it hasn't broken down yet.
And I will say for the sifting, it does really make the soil so fluffy. It's pretty nice if you're willing to go through the work of it, but really nut grass is all about the work.
Truly.
Well, another important thing, two more that I can think of important aspects of the site is, are there utilities flowing around the land, water lines already existing,
electrical lines,
important.
Electrical cable.
Yes, there's all kinds of things, electrical lines overhead, also for big trees. you want to consider where those are. Maybe near the water line is a good place because you'll be able to tap off some irrigation water for your own garden. But generally planting big trees on top of utility lines is not recommended.
Yes. And then there's the issue of the sewage. So
yes.
for septic tanks, for leach fields especially, mm-hmm. which seem to be, oh, look at this lush part of the yard. This is where
sure.
I'm going to put the garden. Obviously not a safe place from a pathogenic standpoint. We don't want to be growing our veggies on top of the leach field.
That's right. And one more thing I think of here in Hawaii, there are so many sacred sites that really wise planning to research that and understand that if there are any sacred sites on the site.
Correct. And even if it's not that the site itself is the site of a heiau, which of course would be very important to acknowledge and plan in accordance with, but large pohaku, the large stones of the land holding so much of the spirit of this island and the memory of this island, they are truly ancestors of this sacred land. And the pohaku, great care must be taken in the consideration of moving them or altering them in any way. So part of the sacredness of this island as well.
Sure. And then there's also history that is not so noble, such as former sugar land and other commercially farmed places that may have been polluted. And you want to know that sites like that need kind of a specialized cleanup.
Perhaps we can round up now because we'd like to spend a little bit of time on our Secrets of the Soil Builders. Finally, I'm going to think about our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And so often people will consider their neighbors a nuisance, better not to be spoken with, lest problems crop up. I would encourage people to actually see their neighbors as allies rather than enemies. And certainly we, taking this approach, so many beneficial relationships can occur where we can collaborate on gardening, like we mentioned earlier, where we can even have people who don't garden themselves but would like to purchase some vegetables from us, some of our excess, so that we can turn some of those funds back into the care of the soil, pay for some of our gardening tools maybe. And finally, those mentors, people who have greater experience than us, who have been growing in our exact location or the desired location for so many years and can tell us which crops, which plants, which varieties perform well in our location. Really important to know. So love your neighbors and the love will come back a thousandfold.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit on site selection and assessment. Plenty more. Encourage people to look at some more of the permaculture manual or other guidance from the permaculture world on starting off your project. And we are going to jump now finally into our final segment here because we want to give honor to some special friends who don't stand out in the hot sun. but stand behind the sun-loving plants to add so much beauty, texture, subtle grace, and lushness to our landscapes, to our gardens. And these are the shade-loving, or at least the shade-tolerant plants.
Mm-hmm.
We love them. So I'll start off by letting folks know that shade-tolerant plants use a strategy where they are actually really adept at using far red light. Oftentimes this is the light that penetrates a forest canopy. And so if we think about the evolution of plants making an effort to fill various available niches in the environment, and so they develop this ability to harness the far red light that passes through the canopy of a forest. As well, they develop specialized formations of their leaves to capture more light. They tend to have broader leaves with thinner, the leaves are thinner, they don't need to stand up to that direct sunlight. So very specially adapted, the plants as well. And in the trade-off of not being able to harness as much solar energy, oftentimes these shade-loving plants require richer nutrient conditions, which, if you imagine an old-growth forest and all that broken-down organic matter on the soil, these are the perfect conditions for the shade-loving plants to proliferate. So if we want to recreate these conditions in our own environments, perhaps we're planting a shade garden because we have to, because it's required based on the fact that we just don't get a whole lot of sun in our landscape, or we actually have some sun areas and some shade areas, but we really love the plants that love these areas and we want to play with them. We need to give special attention to boosting the fertility and richness of nutrients in those growing areas.
Yeah, and you know, the one that comes right to mind firstly is right here at home, the hapu'u, or tree ferns. I mean, they're just living in that moist, mossy, you know, fallen logs kind of area, and they're so beautiful. And we do have so many shade-loving native plants that thrive in the native forests here. The tree ferns are just one of them. Another one of my favorites is the bird nest fern.
And so many ferns.
Oh, so many.
Yes. And so as we think about why we would use the shade-loving plants, sometimes it's for their beauty, sometimes it's even for their food, and perhaps in some cases like the monstera vine, which will provide some the beautiful, delicious food, this plant related to kalo, and has a delicious banana pineapple flavored fruit. Interesting to learn that the monstera actually, when it's a young plant, actually grows away from the sunlight, and then it grows into the sunlight. Why does it do this? Because it's seeking the trunk of a tree, a shady area that it can then climb to actually reach the canopy. Very,
wow.
Very cool.
Smart plant.
Very smart plant. So this is called photophilia, is growing toward the sun when they break into the full sunlight. Philodendron will do the same thing, a member of the same family. We did want to give mention as well to some of the vegetables that you can sort of get away with if you have a pretty shady environment. And like Robin had told me before the show, in her trials, in so many cases, just because you can get a plant to grow in the shade doesn't mean it's really happy to be there. But sometimes you got to work with what you have.
Sure.
And so thanks to Mother Earth News for this list of in order of plants that can survive more shade in terms of vegetables, something that people are always looking for guidance on. So according to them, Asian greens can survive with a minimum of 2 hours of direct sunlight a day, followed by arugula, herbs like chive, cilantro, lemon balm, mint, oregano, and parsley, which need only 3 hours. Kale, 3 to 4 hours a day. It's not going to look like a kale in the full sun, but you'll get some food from it. Lettuce is also one that you can have success with 3 to 4 hours, as well as spinach. Root vegetables, needing an extra hour of sunlight at 4 to 5, as well peas and beans. And I know that we've grown long beans in a pretty shady environment and had a huge yield of beans as well. So,
nice.
And as well, cowpea, which long beans are in the same species,
yeah, Bigna,
are said to be pretty shade tolerant as well.
Awesome.
So if you are working with a challenging situation as well, there's the painting of a wall of your, if you're growing up against the side of the house. If that side of the house is light colored, it's going to reflect the sunlight. Also, recommendations found to be reflective mulch, which can greatly increase the reflection of the UV that causes plants to thrive. Plants you'd really want to avoid growing in a high shade environment would be fruit producing plants like eggplant and tomatoes and peppers, which really do require a minimum of 6 hours, if not greater, for full expression and fruiting.
Although on the bigger side of things, food crops like cacao prefer the shade, and shade-grown coffee, of course, fetches a way higher price in the marketplace than sun-grown coffee.
Good point. So mm-hmm. Now we're diving into plants that are beyond just our traditional Western vegetables. And luckily here in the subtropics, we can grow many plants in part shade. In addition to those two fruit trees, the mountain apple, anybody who's ever taken the Nepali Coast Trail can find a very deeply shaded forest that has just covered with fruit. So that seems to be a great plant in the shade. Here's another list. Ginger, cardamom, Olena turmeric. I mentioned the monstera, ferns, as we mentioned as well, and sweet potato will at least exist as a vegetatively grown plant, if not produce the tubers in more of a shaded environment as well.
Well, you know, one ornamental that's so close to our hearts is the tea plant, and the tea in green or bright red seems to do just fine in the full-on blazing sun. But when we get into those subtleties of the variegated leaves and so many colors, I've seen it over and over again. In the full sun, the leaves just basically bleach out, and you get maybe a little bit of stripe. But in the shade, those colors really pop. So I'd say that a lot of those ornamental teas in so many colors really prefer some amount of shade in the day as well. And, of course, our anthuriums, who thrive only in indirect light such as that. But just to add a couple to the list, back from the native zone is the beautiful fern for Hakulei called Palapalai, just a gorgeous shade-grown fern, and also a small person of the forest, which I've only been lucky enough to see in the wild a few times, is Peperomia, which is a beautiful little succulent.
Ala Vainui, mm-hmm. Beautiful relative of the Ava plant and the black pepper plant found on the beautiful Pohaku that we mentioned earlier, the rocks, and sometimes the last vestige of the native Hawaiian forest on these refuge of the large stones, or Pohaku. So hope you enjoy the shade-loving plants. We're going to finish up our hour here with just to mention that there are some upcoming agriculture classes at KCC, Kauai Community College. For more information, you want to go to the Kauai OSET website. A simple web search for Kauai and OCET will yield you the website in question. And we want to thank the rest of the In the Garden on the Farm team, our phone tech Mac, our engineer Jack, our webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean, as well as our volunteer coordinator extraordinaire Dove. Thank you so much for an amazing concert on Sunday. Wow, what a fun time with Nako and Medicine for the People. Super time had by all. And we want to encourage you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations. We've got Dove's going to be in the house for that one. And we've got Shaka Kayaka with the Pupule Show from 3 to 5. Kauai Surf Stories coming up after that. Lots of great programming. So thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for more.
Aloha.
Aloha. And we're going to get to some music here coming up pretty soon. It seems as if this little CD is just warming up for us. This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ in Molua'a, K284AL Hala'iva.